Hi, everyone, and thanks for tuning into UBS's Global Research Pod Hub, a channel that shares insights from economists, strategists, and equity analysts on the pivotal questions and events shaping today's markets. UBS economists and strategists have recently published their year ahead outlook. In fact, it's for 2 years, 2025 and 2026. Now, this is one of our main publications. The whole team gets to work. It's about a 450-page document, more than 600 charts, 20 trade ideas, 23 essays. So the works. It's a large document. It's an intense document. What we're hoping to do on this podcast is between me, Bhanu Baweja, and I'm the chief strategist at UBS Investment Bank, and Aaron Kapton, who's the head of economics and strategy research, we're going to lay out the main calls, both from economics and from a markets perspective. So hope you find that useful. Aaron, how are you doing?
Very well. Hi, Bhanu.
Have you recovered on some sleep since this publication?
Not really.
Okay. That's going to happen at some point close to Christmas. So let's start with the key economics calls, right? So just from a 60,000 foot view, what is the outlook? Which regions are improving and which regions aren't?
Yeah. So, you know, if you step back and just look at the fundamentals of the global economy, then things are getting better, right? So you're seeing with the inflation shock subsiding, the interest rate shock subsiding, you're seeing real disposable income growth at sort of 20-year highs. Credit growth is starting to inflect higher. Housing markets starting to recover. So everything sort of looks to be getting better. And what's sort of then surprising, I think, is if you look at our forecast, we actually have things getting worse. And so we have global growth, you know, declining from a little bit over 3% this year. We think about 3.2 to about 2.9 next year, and then 2.6 the year after. Now, the reason that's happening is really because of the two large economies, so China and the US. And so in the case of the US, it's basically just the, you know, our view that the US cannot continue to grow at nearly 3%. So we have that coming back down to earth, probably around 2 or slightly below 2. And in the case of China, it's because we've taken the tariffs into the forecast, right? And so we have, you know, higher tariffs than have recently been announced by incoming President Trump. But that does a lot of damage to an already weak economy.
Okay. So in terms of global growth, you're going from about 3.2 to 2.9 to 2.6. So despite slightly improving fundamentals, we're going from a below trend growth to further below trend growth in the global economy, driven by US and China largely.
Yeah, although I think trend has probably come down, right? So we used to think of global trend growth being about 3.5. Mm-hmm. We think it's probably closer to 3 now. That's largely because of China. China is no longer a 6-7% economy. We think it's sort of a, you know, 4-5% type of economy. So we're probably currently not far from potential, but very unevenly spread, right? So if you, you know, yes, we, you know, we got to something a little north of 3% this year. At a global growth level, but it's because China's actually very weak. US is actually very strong. The median global growth rate is about half of its potential, right? So it's really because of that outsized US strength that we got anywhere close to sort of that potential growth number. And then looking ahead, what actually happens is that imbalance sort of goes away. So we have some improvement, I think, really at the median level where the smaller economies pick up a little bit momentum because of those improving fundamentals. But then you have China slowing even more and the US actually, you know, coming back to more normal levels.
But would you say that your calls are below consensus?
Yeah. So if you look at the forecast, they are really across the board below consensus, both on growth and inflation. And so I asked myself, you know, why is that? You know, is it because not everyone's released their outlook yet, for instance, or hasn't taken the tariffs into the baseline? And certainly a large part of the sort of the below consensus bit is coming from China. And because we pull China down so much, or we assume these tariffs are so important, it has some negative spillover to the entire region, right? So all of Asia is then below consensus. Europe exports a lot to Asia, you know, so that then pulls Europe down. So there is sort of a knock-on effect, I think, from that tariff call. So that's really quite important. And then I think on the inflation side, I think we are on the optimistic side in terms of the disinflation momentum, right? We can really see it in all the data globally that in almost every component, we're nearly back now at pre-pandemic levels.
Okay, let's talk about the tariffs. What are you assuming for tariffs when you throw the numbers into your models? And what do the models then spit out in terms of the impact on growth and impact on inflation?
Yeah, so we basically took what Trump campaigned on, right? So we have 60% tariffs on 75% of Chinese goods starting to phase in from September next year in four tranches. So basically from about September next year to mid-26. The logic for that, the phasing in, is that that's what happened in 2018-19. So it sort of ratchets up. The exclusion logic, so why only on 75% of goods, is sort of also the same as in 2018-19, is that there are many items on which China has 100% market share. So if you impose a tariff on U.S. importers and they don't have an ability to buy those goods somewhere else, then you're basically just effectively putting the burden on your own economy, not on the other economy. And so we assume that there are a large number of corporates that will get exemptions, right? So that's sort of the logic behind the China tariffs. We have not assumed any global tariffs, right? Although Trump also campaigned on those. That's clearly still a live issue. We're recording this podcast on the 29th of November. We just a couple of days ago had the announcement that on the first day in office, he intends to impose tariffs on Mexico and Canada as well. I think the Canadian tariffs are a bit of a surprise there. I think Mexico is maybe less of a surprise. But that's already starting to deviate a little bit from our assumption. But that is still very different from doing these global tariffs he campaigned on. So if you do a across-the-board tariff of 10% or 20%, that would completely change the outlook, and that's not in our baseline.
So just in terms of the timing of the tariffs, right, couldn't you say that maybe the 2018 template is not the right one to look at because this time he's better prepared, he's come in with a greater mandate, and he's not going to waste time, he's just going to go, the announcement comes in soon, and the actual implementation also comes in soon?
Yeah, in a sense, we have that, right? Because in the last time he was president, it came in after 2-3 years. It's coming in the first year. Now, I think there is then the issue of, you know, announcement versus implementation. So he has said that he wants to sign an executive order sort of on the first day in office. That's not really how it works, right? So there are some legalities surrounding, you know, how you would impose tariffs. You make a proposal. The USTR, so the U.S. Trade Representative, then with his colleagues, they come up with a very detailed, you know, line by line. This is thousands of tariff lines. They have to make a proposal as to what goods the tariffs go up on and by how much. Then there has to be a comment period for corporates to then come back and say, well, this is very damaging to my business. I think you should change it. Can I get an exemption? And so that process takes many, many months. Even the legal authority that's likely to be used to impose those tariffs, you know, even if they announce it in January, which is likely it's called sort of Section 301 in the U.S., that doesn't actually have clear deadlines on when things are supposed to, you know, happen. And so we think this could take, you know, until the middle of next year, if not, you know, into the third quarter before we actually get the tariffs implemented.
Which means that the inflation impact is then felt only most of it in 2026.
Correct. Yeah.
And that matters for central bank policy, that matters for the Fed?
Yeah, although, so that's something that we're uncertain about. So yes, clearly the timing of the implementation matters. What's less clear is whether they might start to take it into their reaction function earlier, right? So if they know with a high degree of certainty that these tariffs are coming, you know, would they pretend, you know, because it hasn't been implemented, it doesn't affect them yet, and then, you know, once it gets implemented, then they sort of change their stance, or do they actually already early in 2025, you know, start to sort of expect those tariffs, you know, revise the inflation outlook in their forecast and maybe stop their cutting cycle early, right? And I think that's something we're sort of, you know, worried about.
Right. Let's talk about U.S. rates. I'm conscious that we're only talking about the U.S., but U.S. rates is the risk-free rate of the world, so it's important that we get that right. How worried are you that fiscal deficits in the U.S., and especially if they're going to widen out under Trump, are going to lead to a serious dislocation in the U.S. bond market?
So there's various aspects to it. So the starting point is that we're already in a pretty bleak situation in the sense that deficits are running, you know, around 6.5% of GDP. And in our forecast, we have them running about 7% of GDP. So that is, you know, how do we come up with that number? We basically sort of cost everything that Trump has campaigned on. We make some judgments about, you know, what is likely to be implemented and not. So for instance, the corporate income tax, we think goes down to roughly 18%. You can sort of debate whether that's correct. But basically that sort of gives us these 7% of GDP deficits. Now, that actually implies that you're largely rolling over the existing situation. There's not a lot of additional stimulus here, which is inflationary or accelerating the economy. But what you are, you know, what you are doing is basically rolling over something that is already rapidly increasing the debt. So the debt is now going up by about 3% of GDP per year. And if you do nothing else and you keep these deficits at these levels, then in 10 years' time, you know, debt to GDP will be 30 percentage points of GDP higher. It'll be in excess of Greece. It'll be level with Italy. And it just keeps going up. And that's actually sort of a relatively optimistic scenario because it assumes lower market yields than we currently have. It also is possible that we're too conservative on these deficit levels, so that, you know, that we end up with higher deficit levels. So I think there is sort of all this uncertainty. And if you look at the trajectory, clearly a lot of people are worried about that. But then to your question, like, when does the market care about that? And so that's sort of less clear, in part because, you know, we think of, obviously there's a lot of issuance associated with those deficits, and the market then needs to buy that issuance. And the question is, you know, when is there an indigestion problem? Is there some kind of discontinuity in how much the market has to absorb? And that discontinuity is not next year, right? So next year we have basically roughly the same issuance as we had this year. And there was really no real issue, I think, in absorbing it. It's only 2026 and beyond that then it starts to sort of go up, right? So for us, that's probably the time to get a little bit more worried.
Okay, let's talk about China then, Aaron. China's going to see tariffs very likely being imposed upon it. That'll create a drag on the economy. The property market is already a drag on the economy, but they're also trying to stimulate their economy. So how do you net out the impact of all of these vectors on economic growth?
Yeah, so we assign values to the, you know, how much is the property sector subtracting from growth? And so next year, we think that's, you know, with everything that's now been announced, we think that is still going to be on the order of 1.5 to 2 percentage points of GDP. So it's very, very large, right? This is the biggest sector in the economy. So despite all the help, you know, we still think it's dragging growth down. And then tariffs are probably worth something like 1.5 percentage points. So if you take the two combined, you know, you have something like 3.5 percentage points of GDP in growth drag, and they're doing, we think, about 2 percentage points of GDP in stimulus. So there's a lot of stimulus. Actually, globally, China is the, you know, the biggest source of fiscal stimulus next year. It's just not enough, I think, to offset the two sources of drag.
Okay, and it's, if you just look at the numbers, not necessarily the underlying story, it's a fairly gloomy picture. It's not the brightest picture. So what are some of the risks, especially upside risks, that could give us better growth, better outcomes?
Yeah, so I think there's quite a few, actually. So I mentioned at the beginning these improving fundamentals, but even if you think about the two large economies, so China itself could just mechanically start to bottom, right? And there's some hints of that happening in the current data, where you know, we have a story where we say, look, the property intervention, you know, strategy is sort of underfunded and prices haven't fallen enough yet to clear the market, et cetera, et cetera. But at some stage, things have just gone down far enough, right? And you just mechanically sort of hit the bottom and you start to bounce. And it's possible that that happens much sooner than we expect, right? Also because at some stage, you reach a critical mass of sort of you know, government intervention, confidence starts to sort of build, and then things turn around. So that's possible. It's also possible that the tariffs that we've assumed are too high. Maybe it's not 60, right? If he's now proposed 25, now 25 might be an opening bid, it might sort of go up, but it's possible we end up with lower tariffs. So for China, those are two things that could go right. For the US, I think what we've really struggled with is, while we can see some sources of that slowdown, right? So we can see already the fading fiscal stimulus, we can see the reduced immigration flow, but we've had this story where the consumer is running out of money. And we can see that in the data, except we cannot really see that translating into lower consumption growth. And the reason is that the top 20% of the income distribution just keeps outspending the bottom 80. And so it is possible that that just continues, right? So we keep telling a story where we think this is one or two quarters away, and then, you know, it keeps not, or keeps getting delayed. The other thing is that the Fed cuts, and not just for the US, but globally, the central bank cuts that we're now seeing, they're really worth a lot, right? If you do everything that the market is pricing, they should really start to accelerate parts of the economy. And so it's also possible that despite some of the negatives that we can identify, that that starts to neutralize them and that you don't get the slowdown. So, you know, if we're saying that the outlook is coming, the slowdown, the outlook is coming from a slowdown in the two large economies, there's actually ways in which those two large economies don't slow as much as we currently have in the forecast.
Thank you for visiting UBS's Research Pod Hub. That was an overview of our key calls for 2025 and 2026 as published in our outlook. With me, Bhanu Baweja, Chief Strategist at the UBS Investment Bank, and Aaron Kapton, Head of Economics and Strategy Research at UBS Investment Bank. If you've enjoyed this episode, please tune in again and share this episode with a friend or a colleague.
This content has been prepared by UBS AG, its subsidiaries and or affiliates, and is purely informational in nature. It is not investment research and does not contain an investment recommendation, nor investment or professional advice. It is not an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, and you should seek your own financial, tax, and legal advice before engaging in any such activity. UBS has no responsibility to you in relation to this content. It has no regard to your personal circumstances or investment objectives, and receiving it does not imply any form of client relationship with UBS for any legal, regulatory, or tax purpose. This content is not intended for distribution into any jurisdiction where to do so would be contrary to law or regulation. UBS does not accept any liability over the content of such material or reliance upon any information contained herein. The views and opinions expressed by any guest speaker or third party are not those of UBS. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over any such views and opinions expressed by such persons. This content is the valuable intellectual property of UBS, and UBS specifically prohibits the redistribution of it in whole or in part without its prior written permission. UBS 2024, the key symbol, and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS, all rights reserved.